Radio.
St. Francis for Today. A talk by Father Robert Stewart at the Capuchin Franciscan Youth Fest 2014.
It's really hard to imagine that someone who lived 800 years ago can have an effect on our lives today. But if you look around, there are some people dressed, well, quite a lot of us are in brown. Brown seems to be the colour here this weekend. But there are a lot of us dressed in these robes, and we are basically dressed the similar way in which St. Francis dressed. So at least the fashion held for 800 years, if nothing else. We still wear it, hoping that one day it will come back in fashion, but after a cycle of 800 years, I doubt that it's going to come back. But it's really to find out, what can he say to us today? How can this man inspire us 800 years later? Well, he actually has been inspiring people literally for that 800 years. There's a great story of him one day, because one of the men that joined him was a knight. And to be a knight, that was the prestige job of the day. It was like being a famous sportsman today, a soccer player for the Australian soccer team, or a rugby league player, or an AFL player, or perhaps a movie star today. But it was the prestige job of the day. And it was the job that any young man with red blood in him was after, was looking for. It was a time of war. War was common, as common as almost our football and our sports events. Almost every spring, there'd be a war. Someone would be invading someone else. That's why if you go to where St. Francis lived, all the little towns are built on hills with huge high walls around them to protect themselves. And even if you go into Assisi, you can see where the houses had no front doors. There was no first floor door. Your door was up, and you went up a ladder, and at night you pulled up that ladder and you shut the door, and you hoped that nobody would be coming knocking at that door. That was the way. It was a time of war, and it was a time of great unrest. And one of the men that joined St. Francis was a knight. Now, St. Francis himself was very short. I think he barely reached 5 foot tall. He was not particularly good looking. And this man that joined him was a noble creature. To be a knight, you had to be fit. Just to wear the armour, you would have to be fit to wear it and to wield a sword or whatever you're wielding with it on, because it was iron and it was heavy. And you couldn't buy them at Target. They had to be, each suit of armour had to be handmade to you. Not made, but forged, particularly for you. And this knight, who was handsome, noble, tall, became a follower of this little man, barely 5 foot. One day they were walking in the woods, and he said to him, to Francis, "Francis, why? Why you? Why is all the world following you? You're not famous, you're not rich, you're not handsome, you have no nobility. Why you?" And Francis' answer was, "Because I am the least. I am the most despicable of people. I am the one who least responds. And if God's grace can touch me, then everyone in this world has hope. And I think that's one of the first things that Francis brings to us. Always a fresh hope. Because in the end, that's what the church brings to the world. The hope. We have just celebrated our Easter season. We've just completed it. And it is a time of hope. Every time the priest raises that chalice and said, "This is the chalice of my blood, the blood of the new and eternal covenant, which will be poured out for you and for many." Why? For the forgiveness of sins. That is the hope that the world brings, the church brings to the world. The possibility ever of new beginning. And it is what the priest offers for people in the confessional. And this is really the stream with which Francis entered into. The whole understanding of what the church is all about and why Christ came, he understood. And I am very biased in what I'm about to say, but I do think there is no other saint in the church that truly understood what the incarnation was all about, except Saint Francis. Others, I'm not saying others didn't, but Francis had a unique understanding of it, that God entered our reality and why he did that and what that means for us. So who is this little man who is not noble, not rich? He grew up like any other young man in a little town northeast of Rome, in the province in Italy called Umbria. In the little town that if he didn't live there and he didn't become a saint, we would not know where it is on the map. But even if you don't know where it is, you know the word Assisi. In fact, Francis of Assisi is probably the most well-known saint in the world. Apart from, he may be the most well-known, but I think the person that everybody prays to is one of his confreres, Saint Anthony. And fortunately, I look after church in Saint Anthony is the patron. And we have a statue of Saint Francis, and nobody goes to the statue of St. Francis. But there is a well-worn path to St. Anthony. He grew up and he was lucky enough to be born into what we would say today is a middle-class family. But in his time, the world was changing. Actually, almost as fast as the world is changing for you. When I was born some time ago, there was no word in the dictionary for computer. Now there is a dictionary just for computer. The world in my lifetime has changed enormously, but in his time, the whole of society. We kind of think of the Dark Ages as, well, they just sat down, they planted their crops. Kings came, kings went, bishops were there, monasteries were there. But in actual fact, there was a lot happening in his time. And he's a man of his time. And he was lucky enough, as I said, to be born into a very reasonably rich family. And his father was getting richer by the day. He was a cloth merchant, and you can go, there's debate where his actual shop is, but you can go to Assisi and say, there's a shop, and then if you go for another tour, they'll show you where the shop was in another place. So that you, he was there somewhere. And he worked in his father's shop. But he was just like any young man, and he was lucky enough to for his father to support him. But he loved to party. Let me read you what his first biographer said only 20 years after his death. Certain it is that the saint's early life gave no presage of the golden years that were to come. No one loved pleasure more than Francis. He had a ready wit, sung merrily, delighted in fine clothes and showy display. He was handsome. He was, the word is gay, but it's not the way we understand the word today. He was gallant. I was actually going to translate it to another word, but I couldn't think of another word. He was a happy person. It makes it even worse. Handsome, gay, gallant, courteous. He soon became the prime favourite among the young nobles of Assisi. The foremost in every feat of arms, the leader of civil rivals, the very king of frolic. We don't use frolic much these days, do we? But it's just, it was the king, a party, that's what we would use today. He was the one that would start a party, he was the one who would keep it going. And he spent his father's money doing it. The other thing his father loved, as it said there, he loved fine clothes. And his father dressed him. He was a walking billboard for his father's shop. The other thing he was is what a lot of young men, some young men are, they are the trendsetters of fashion. I still remember I was watching football, the soccer. The very first day that David Beckham walked out on the field with his hair up like that, it's no longer the fashion, like a rooster. And I remember the commentator saying, "That's what happens when you let your wife do your hair." And within months, it was the fashion. Every young man had that fashion. This man still sets the fashion for men in the world. That's what Francis did. He set the fashion. In fact, he had one fashion where he would sew the most expensive clothes on one side and basically bag sacking on the other and mix them up. And that became a fashion. And you can actually still look in medieval pictures and they have that matched up. Francis set that fashion. So how does this young man who loves to party become this poor, humble person? Well, one of the other things he wanted to do was become a knight. There were two ways of becoming a knight in the Middle Ages. You were either born into nobility and that you automatically got the knighthood, or you did something heroic and brave in a battle and you were knighted. And so he wasn't born in nobility, so he had to do it the hard way. His father supported it because it would support his business as well, his life and his rise up the social ladder. So his father bought him a suit of armour. And as I said, you just don't go to Target and get a suit of armour. He had to have it made. And of course, you can't just have a suit of armour. You've got to have the war horse as well. And a war horse is not just an ordinary horse you get out of the field. A war horse is like a cross between a horse and one of those draft horses. It had a huge, big, strong back so that it could carry a knight in armour. And then, of course, you had to have the armour. You had to have the sword and a spear and the lance, the long pointy thing. And you had to have a squire to carry all that for you and to take the armour off and to put it on for you. The equivalent of what his father did for him today is like buying you a house and a car. That's how interested his father was in him becoming a knight. And of course, he sets himself up. The first battle, he's captured. House, car, gone. But because he was dressed as a knight, he was not thrown in the pits with the poor people. He was put in the jail with the nobles. And one of the things they did in those days, if you were a noble and you were captured, they would demand a ransom for you. The practice still holds today quite well. Survived 800 years. But his family couldn't pay. So he spent a year in jail. And a year in a medieval jail has got to do something to you. Got to change you in some way. The mere fact that you survive a year in a medieval jail is a miracle. And he began to think about his life. Is this really this whole dream that I've lived all my life in one moment? It's gone. It's gone. Something that seemed so solid, so sure, gone. And he began to think. Apart from the fact that it ruined his health. And when he came back, he went back into the party life, but it just didn't have the same effect on him. And he began to question, what is it you want me to do? And he began to go to the caves around Assisi. You can still go to them today. But he didn't actually just go like you go into the Janolan caves and you're looking around, oh, look at the stalactites. Yeah, it's lovely, you know. He used to crawl into the space. So there was a space that big. I don't know if you've ever been in a cave and they've turned the lights out. It's horrendous. Because our eyes need light to see. There is no light. So not only do we not see, we lose perspective of up, down, left, right. There's no point of reference. Well, that's where he would go into this sensory deprivation, into complete darkness. And he would pray. And one of his companions who would go with him said, he went in one man and came out another, a different man. And one day he was praying in a little church that's halfway down the hill of Assisi called San Damiano. It had fallen into ruin. Half the wall, one side, was all collapsed. And he used to go there and pray because it was quiet. And that cross, which we haven't got a copy of here, which you can all imagine in your mind, was the one that was actually there in that little chapel. And he would pray to it, Lord, what do you want me to do? Over and over again, Lord, what do you want me to do? And then one day, the cross spoke back to him. Francis, as you can see, my house is falling into ruin. Go and rebuild it. And if you actually got from God a specific command, a direction, you would go and do it straight away. And that's exactly what he did. He went and he begged stones. And you can actually go to that little church today and you can see most of the church is all the same colour stone. But there is a section on the side that is some all different colours and different sizes and shapes. And they have actually preserved his renovation of the church. But gradually he realised, after beginning this very down-to-earth practical way, that the Lord was asking him to do something deeper. Not just physically rebuild churches, but to spiritually rebuild it. And if you look at the history of the church, the century that he was born in, he was born in 1182, the church looks back at that as the depth, the bottom, the worst of centuries of the history of the church, where the church came down to a low ebb. Yet, the very century after is referred to as the golden age of the church. What did this man do? What did he do? He had no intention of starting an order. All he wanted to do was do what Jesus had told him to do. But because he was doing it, he attracted many men, women, and lay people. From the point of his conversion to his death is only 20 years. 20 years. When I reached the age, and I've passed it, when he died, I thought to myself, Francis changed the world in the period that he had. What have I done? In only 20 years. By the time he had died, there were literally thousands of friars. There was a whole order of ladies. There was a whole order of secular Franciscans. There were kings and queens who belonged. There was at least one king who belonged to that order of secular Franciscans before he died. The patrons of the secular Franciscan is a king and a queen, King Louis of France and Elizabeth of Hungary. And they were not the only ones. And to this day, St. Francis of Assisi has the biggest bibliography of any other person that has lived. Almost every week, every month, something is written about this man 800 years later. What is it that this man has that inspires the human spirit, that touches something primeval in us? And I think that's the key. He actually touches, or really the word is awakens, something within us that is deep, that we long for. I don't know whether you've ever had that experience where you're kind of looking for something and you don't know what it is, but all of a sudden you'll hear a song, you'll read a poem, you'll read a book, you'll see a picture, you speak to someone and it just, there's something that clicks. I would have it, there's a million things I could say, what he did, what he want, what he gives to us, but I think what he gives to us is actually in on the back of your hoodies. Pax et bonum. That is actually the motto of the Franciscan Order. Peace and all good. What he gives us is what we're actually all looking for, is peace. He shows us the way to peace. Peace with God. Peace within ourselves. Peace between ourselves. And peace with the world that we're in. And I think that's what a lot of people in the end are really looking for. That true peace. This little man who wasn't famous, created a tidal wave that comes to us today. How does he give us or show us this way of peace? I think because of his own journey and his own relationship with God, which he struggled with He honed. He chiseled out of his own heart. Because he prayed another prayer. Who are you and who am I? His prayers are very simple but incredibly deep. Who are you, God, and who am I? And he would repeat that over and over again, asking, seeking, what is the relationship between you and me? And I think the key to him and the key of what he offers us today is that way of peace is to put things back in perspective. And that also to find the way in which and why we lose that peace. Because when God created humanity and this world before the fall, St. Bonaventure tells us we were able to read four or understand four languages. There's many of you who come from different cultures. If I was to speak the language that my ancestors spoke, which I don't know anything of, and I think there's only people really on the top of Scotland that speak it anymore. But there are the people that I minister to a lot is the Italians. And when the first ones came, they spoke the language, but then their children spoke some of it, and now their grandchildren have to go to school to learn the Italian or the language that their grandmother spoke. And that's what we have lost, that language that God originally gave to us. When we were created in peace. We were at peace with God, within ourselves, with each other, and with all of creation. And there was this a natural movement of our human energy was outward to God, outward to the other, outward to creation. But with original sin, the first thing that happened with original sin after they ate the apple was what? What was the first thing they discovered about themselves? They were naked. So what? The clothes they had on all of a sudden disappeared? No, they were naked before. So why is it all of a sudden they discovered that they were naked? One of the first effects of original sin was our consciousness went in on ourselves. We became self-conscious, self-focused. And in actual fact, our world, but Western society is actually living that curse. If you don't believe me, watch TV for about half an hour. Look at the ads. We have insurance companies. I insurance, me insurance. It's all about me. Our self-centeredness and our self-focus is bringing us down in on ourselves. And therefore we lose that contact, a real way of being with others. We struggle to do it, but it is so hard. We have iPhones and iPads. And whatever, I'm sure you can name 1,000 things. And the most amazing thing I've ever seen, I should have taken a photo with my iPhone. There's a young couple, arm in arm, together on a park bench. He's on the phone this way, she's on the phone that way. That's love. But it's sort of like we live in a world with so much communication. With this thing, It's not my thing, but it's someone else's thing. With this funny little thing, I can actually see what's going on anywhere in the world. If it's, there's internet. If there's something that goes on, I can look at the World Cup, I can look at a disaster that's happened. I'm in contact with the world, and I'm in contact with anybody else that has one of these, providing they've got it turned on. But can you talk to the person who's just next to you? Is that communication? And I think that's what Francis offers us. Because he turns the whole thing on its head. It doesn't start with me. It actually has to start with God. Many of you might know our place there at Leichhardt, 98 Catherine Street, and where the Friars are at 96. On the balcony of 98 Catherine Street, which used to be the postulancy, you can actually see the best panorama of Sydney. And if you look carefully, actually, there's two little like toothpicks in amongst the whole of the skyscrapers. Those little toothpicks are the spires of St. Mary's Cathedral. And when you're, if you've gone with the Friars on the van, and we go down the back of the cathedral, and if you look up, you can see that the spires of St. Mary's Cathedral are actually taller than the Sydney Tower. It's all a matter of perspective. See, sometimes in our life we think we are, by being self-centered and self-focused, bigger than that reality. But Francis brings out the perspective and reminds us that God is God. And that God is the one for whom and through whom we have life. And he is the one that really brings us back to the understanding of what true peace is all about. That true peace is understanding that we are creatures of God. That he has made us in his image and in his likeness. And that we share his very life. He breathed his life into Adam. That is the life that was lost with original sin. But Francis's hero, which is Christ, brings back that life to us. He brings it back to us through his cross and resurrection. And what we have celebrated, the mystery of Easter, but the mystery of the church, and last Sunday, the Corpus Christi, where that moment, that salvation moment, shoots through time and space. Our time, our space, here, now. And that's what Francis puts it all back into perspective. And all the talks that you'll hear this weekend will show us the different ways, but it all is a beautiful symphony. It is all for Francis in the same key, and the key is God, and the beat is Christ and the Holy Spirit. The orchestra is the church that brings it to us. And his reverence for the church, of understanding to rebuild it, not in the sense of just bricks and mortar, that has to be there as well, because he was a down-to-earth person. But it comes down to a very individual point. And that point is my heart. That is why we have that prayer, which he didn't necessarily write, but it certainly sums up his spirituality in very few words. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace for the world. And that's what he does. Wherever you are, whatever situation, he puts it all back in perspective. When he had the first friars together with him, before they even wrote a rule, and they all started out with great enthusiasm, like we start out tonight. By tomorrow morning, that person who snored all night across the way, charity gets weakened. When we get together, I can point out two big snorers, so I advise you, other end of the building. Because what happens is we keep going back in on ourselves. And the friars would come to him and say, I've got a problem with Friar so-and-so. He won't do this. He upsets me. And you know what Francis would do? Well, exactly what I didn't know. He brings out a huge, big mirror, puts it right in front of him. The problem is not with that friar, not with the other person. It's what you have to do. It doesn't matter what he does. It's what you do that will change the world. It's what you do that will rebuild the church. Make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Because the only place where the world is going to change is not in legislation, not in the New World Order, not in revolution. We've had a few of them. They didn't work. But we kind of think that if we keep going, it might work sooner or later. World peace begins in here. And that's the gift that he has given to us. The gift of peace. But not a peace through violence. The violence is in our own heart where we have to change. And he keeps bringing us back to back and back and back to that. And he keeps putting everything back into perspective of God and us and others. And that is really, I think, the key of what he has to offer us today. Because more than anything, that's what we are looking for. So let this weekend, and let the great speakers that we have, people have come from all over the world to speak here tonight and this weekend. And let them show you through different aspects the way to true peace. Peace be with you.
That was Father Robert Stewart on St. Francis for Today. The Capuchin Franciscan Youth Fest 2014 was held at Ruthane Conference Centre in southern Sydney. For more talks from the Capuchin Young Adults, and for more news, interviews and shows, visit cradio.org.au.